Backseat Book Club, ready, player one.
This is Lena.
This is Scott.
This is Paul.
This is Becca.
And I'm Sam.
And this is the first episode of Backseat Book Club. Hello and welcome. Yay!
And this is the part where we transition to business, but we're a new show, so we don't have any.
Yeah, now no. Everybody's nice. Before we turn on the mics, it's just cruel people.
We were cussing each other out. It was bad.
That's how we get to know each other. A little dirty fighting beforehand. And the book we are doing for our very first book club is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
And what's the next book?
The next book is Fight Club. Oh, look, I closed my page. Good, so I don't know the guy's name.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Thank you. And I remembered Fight Club. I am one paragraph in. Oh, boy. I was going to read it on the plane, but I kept falling asleep. Not because of the book, because of the Dramamine. Just so you know, it's not boring. So, we will start off with general thoughts. Scott, what'd you think?
Okay, so this is the bastard offspring of Snow Crash and Scott Pilgrim without any of, like, without really the same sort of core of either, where it's just kind of like, hey, here's a bunch of 80s references for the sake of 80s references, and then some stuff happens at the end, and you're like, oh, happy message.
Okay.
Are you sure that's all that happens in the book? Because I'm pretty sure those 80s references refer to answering questions and getting through specific gates to move on in the game.
We're on high-level thoughts, not plot summary, Sam. Those are different things.
Are they different things?
Keep it together.
God!
Keep it together, Sam.
Well, you know what? I honestly didn't think that the 80s references were all that bad to have, especially considering when they're functioning in the plot. But I do agree about the idea of it being the bastard love child of Scott Pilgrim and such that I just forgot what Scott said. But I don't care, because it's Scott.
Snow Crash.
I haven't read Snow Crash.
Neither have I.
Me neither. So, I had to look it up as soon as he said it.
It's okay.
It's going
Scott,
on the list now.
Scott will say things that sometimes we will all sit there and go, yes, yes, honey, go in the corner. Because we
I
just...
don't think I'll call him honey.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I was going to say I wanted to.
Thank you,
to.
Paul.
Done.
You make me feel welcome.
You're all more than welcome to, you know, I'm all for the sharing. Doesn't bother me.
Good to know.
I have to share him with all the other podcasts he does. I have to accept it, so it's all good. But, you know,
you get to be part of Quickies.
It's true. Oh, okay. Anyways, real thoughts. Real thoughts indeed. I love that this I called it a game. It's a game, sort of.
It is, yes.
I love the fact that this book is kind of like playing an MMO. As somebody who hates MMOs, this also just kind of pleases me in some ways, because it's like I get to watch somebody else's epic winnings and failings without actually having to participate myself and, you know, look like an ass. I kind of liked Wade as a main character, too. I thought that he was somebody that you could relate to just because he was kind of a loser.
Completely pitiful.
He was so pathetic and so pitiful.
Yeah. Well, that's, like, getting into details, but I got a very Count Zero vibe off the first, like, 100 pages of this book.
But you know what? I like the fact that, for the most part, with Wade's character, despite being poor, poor, pitiful me, you know, he does try to rise up against the odds. And, you know, we get a sense of how his character connects to the world and connects with, you know, his different avatars that surround him. And I like the fact that, you know what, just there was something about the way in which Ernest Cline kind of presented the world that I really did gravitate to and I really enjoyed. I like that it was very fleshed out for the most part and that I could envision everything that he was trying to tell me, because a lot of books don't get that right.
I like that.
Yeah, I would say that kind of simple, conversational, direct style, it goes over well. It works for like a gritty near future setting. And I think that's probably the reason I was able to keep reading it. I mean, there's kind of a similar thing going on in both Harry Potter and The Hunger Games, where modern fantasy and sci-fi have kind of moved on to just a very simple conversational style. And that's way better to me than an attempt at flowery prose that just crashes and burns.
Well, and I think with this type of novel, you can't really have the flowery prose to begin with. I mean, this book is technically a young adult novel, whether you look at it that way or not. This is still a kid's journey. And for the most part, I mean, you're watching Wade grow as a character from the first page to the last page. And he gets one of the most important messages of his life at the very end of the story. And that's the moment where you really do connect with him as a character. Because it's like you were progressing through the exact same journey. So I think the conversational style needed to be there. And I mean, you gotta love the fact that there was actual chat logs in the book. Also just to show that there's still that disconnect from face to face.
I think the conversational style kind of reflected on the fact that the character was only 17. So, or 18, you know, so it kind of came across more as the way a 17-year-old would talk.
So in that, Mark Twain, Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer vibe, where it's like, yep, this guy's an ignorant redneck. Let's write him that way.
Well, can you blame Wade for being ignorant? It's kind of difficult considering what his world is like.
And I mean, he really had very little surroundings, that aunt of his, and then just, you know, going to school on Oasis. That was it.
And pretty much, I mean, he's a kid who's had just about everything taken from him.
Yep.
So, and when you watch him interact with a lot of the other characters, I mean, they have their own problems that at first they're not willing to share. And it's not till he kind of dives deep into the game that he starts to really gather his thoughts about how he feels about these people that he barely knows but cares a great deal about. I mean, you don't have that connection unless, like I said, you play an MMO. It's kind of bizarre, but you care about those people that you're gaming with.
Well, see, now I find that similarity in when I started getting involved in this podcasting. Nobody lives in Tampa, and, you know, I've become close with people who are all over the place. And, I mean, people that for quite a while I didn't talk to other than typing stuff out in the chat room during backseat producers and things like that. And, you know, the friendships developed from there. So I found that similarity to be a similarity. Should have phrased that differently. But I think you get what I meant.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm Captain Redundant tonight.
It's all good. I think what I love about this novel is the fact that it reminds us just how much we rely on technology to forge our relationships. And one of my favorite lines from the book, I actually wrote it down just because I thought it was very truthful. And it's said by Halliday at the end of the book, and it says, "I created the Oasis because I never felt at home in the real world. I didn't know how to connect with people there. I was afraid for all my life, right up until I knew it was ending. That was when I realized, as terrifying and as painful as reality can be, it's also the only place where you can find true happiness, because reality is real." It's kind of interesting considering how much we rely on technology to forge our relationships and keep us all together. And yet at the end of this book, he's saying face-to-face relationships matter just as much, if not more.
That also, I mean, not to say that, I know some people who would say that, you know, if you have friends online, they're fake friends, they don't count, but you know, quite a number of them, if I were to meet face to face, it would be like, you know, not like we just met for the first time.
Absolutely.
As far as that idea being important, like, I don't know, coming of age moment in the book, I think it's a fine message for the book, but I think it doesn't ring true with the actual plot and the characters. The characters are by and large autistic, and they don't really relate to each other well. And that line to me presents you a situation where it's, hey, look, now these people actually know each other in real life. And realistically, I can't imagine that their relationship's going that great. And I think it's kind of saccharine and fake to tag that on because there is so little plot and the characters are one-dimensional.
All right. So now we're getting deep. And I'm going to cut you off there. Hold it. Let's do plot.
Okay. So
we should probably summarize that.
Nerd porn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically a ripoff, or not a ripoff, but an homage to 80s coming-of-age sci-fi save-the-world flicks turned into a novel.
Yeah, but I guess more specifically, not too distant future, where the entire world has abandoned the internet in favor of an MMO, like Second Life meets Warcraft on speed. And the creator of this dies and leaves a massive Easter egg hunt thing behind for ownership of the rights to this space and a whole bunch of money that goes with it. Except the clues are ridiculously obscure, so it takes, you know, a long time. And then we have a young man, Wade, who lives in, you know, the shit stain of what, Jersey sprawl?
Oklahoma City.
Okay.
Oklahoma.
See, that's where the Count Zero stuff bleeds in. It's like, yeah, it's Count Zero land. And he eventually, through some genius and memorization of 80s pop culture, begins to find keys to the gates and triggering a race for the finish against corporate douchebags and whatnot.
Okay, then. That was good.
See, actually, I think my biggest problem is that it keeps reminding me of other better things. Like, the opening is Count Zero, and then the middle bit is Little Brother, and then the end is, oh, something weird.
And I can see where you're coming from with that, because, you know, it's like he's cut and pasting, you know, all kinds of different things into this story and trying to make it work. And yes, there is a huge amount of disconnect in the story because of that. At the same time, I guess maybe it just didn't bother me as much as others, just because, you know what? I was just really engrossed in the world. Like, I know the Oasis doesn't sound as interesting as it could be, but...
Oh, that's the other thing. It reminds me of Summer Wars.
Which I have yet to see.
It's
really
good. It's good. Like, it is much better than Digimon the movie. No! Because it's the exact same movie!
But I agree that the world works for me. I like this kind of realistic approach to the beginning of transhumanism. You know, like privacy and personality, you know, in real life or online issues that we're dealing with currently, I think are given good nuance and they're magnified properly. So I dig that. And that might be one of the reasons why I stuck with it. My problem is that that's cool to me for a movie or a TV show. And for a novel, it just doesn't carry the load. I need character and plot. Mostly character, but the setting does pull me in, and I like the way it addresses current issues in a realistically future fashion. But I think the characters, I do like that they're pitiful and they're flawed rather than just a set of, you know, perfect heroes or just people with one obstacle where they just grow up all at once. I mean, they end the book still malformed.
Yeah.
And that's probably the one significant deviation from your classic, you know, 80s coming of age adventure movie. So I like that, but at the same time, I feel that they're simplistic and not very engaging. Like you're talking about how at the end, that moment when Halliday says, "Hey, face to face is really important." I think that probably the only real human moment I got out of the whole thing was when Shoto meets with Wade about Dido's murder. Like that's the only scene in the whole book where I see real care for other people. I mean, even at the very beginning when Wade's aunt dies, he like doesn't even care.
He blinks that off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just his aunt. It's like an entire stack of RVs with people he actually did like.
Right, and then he's depressed for months over his girlfriend not talking to him. You know, it's a completely malformed person, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to psychoanalyze the author, but I think it's not. I don't feel like this is depicting Wade in a way where we're supposed to analyze him in that way. I feel like it's just is just a story without emotional depth.
See, I half agree with you and I half don't. And maybe this is just coming from somebody, you know, who deals with kids who are Wade's age on a regular basis. But, you know, you get to a point where you're so desensitized by everything. And I think that's what you see in Wade in a lot of cases. It's not as much that he doesn't have a lot of character. It's just more of there's just not much to show because of how he presents himself. Yeah, it would be great to have lots of characterization. But when you're at the stage where you feel like nobody gives a shit about you and you don't want to give a shit back, you know, I see that every day.
Then I don't need a book about that.
Exactly. Nobody needs a book like that.
No, I'm saying I don't need a novel about a dude who doesn't care about people and basically at the end still doesn't.
I don't think Wade is able to fully trust people. And I think the novel definitely gives you that vibe that he's not able to.
Like he tries. If anything, he's throwing trust everywhere though. Yeah. It's like you can have my secrets all over the place.
Yeah. I don't mean it in that regard. I mean in the sense that the real world trusting, not so much the game world. In the game world he's somebody else.
I would say it's less about trusting and more about not knowing how to relate at all.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if it's like he can relate to people in a digital space, that's another interesting commentary on the youth of today.
Yep, absolutely.
I think that's what made me identify with this book and want to finish it, because not that I saw myself in Wade, but I saw many of my friends that have issues with online gaming and getting so immersed in the world that I recognized that through Wade, and it reminded me of, I remember when, you know, so-and-so met that guy online and they thought it was real love and things like that. And I think we all a lot of people have friends that are like that, that are so addicted to their online world that they don't identify with the real world anymore.
Yeah, I would say that my generation, I was like a tweener generation between X and Y, in that sons of people I know identify way more with Gen X and identify with way more with Gen Y, even though they're within like the same 3-year age range. And Gen X uses the internet as a tool, and Gen Y uses the internet as a place. And I think that being in a zone where I have people who have the exact same age and very similar backgrounds, seeing this kind of online behavior in completely different lights is an interesting perspective for that kind of losing yourself or being distanced.
And I think Wade has an arc of that where in between gate 1 and 2, where he just kind of like, oh, because I'm cool, I have money now and I don't have to deal with the punk side of the cyberpunk that we've set up. So I'm just going to loaf around on the internet and have 80s references all over the place.
I actually think that's a really good part of the book. It's where he doesn't write about his depression.
Yeah.
He just says it happened and doesn't really go into detail about all of the things that went, that he did during those months. That's I mean, it's an omission, but I think it's a good call.
Yeah, well, the other option would have been like Catcher in the Rye / New Moon levels of angst.
Well, and yeah. Do we really need that when we have enough of that in the YA scene?
Nope.
Yeah, YA exactly. Needs less angst.
Wangst.
Wangst. Is this a new word for you, Lena?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of this is new.
Okay, and I know I'm ragging on all the 80s pop culture references, because there's a lot of moments where it's like, yeah. DeLoreans! They're from Back to the Future! Aren't they cool?
And then yeah, there's I didn't part like of that
me,
at all.
And then there's part of me that's like, wait, really? He's referencing Spider-Man? That's awesome.
I felt like the references, even though they were part of the plot, were kind of a mess. I mean, there are parts where they're well done and they're like clever and appropriate and they fit, but other ones were just so pasted on it felt like a cross between wallowing and pandering.
Some of them just didn't. So there was, they didn't make sense. I mean, just, you know, his favorite show was Family Ties.
Well, yeah, no, that makes sense because it's a normal fan. Like, well, he could have picked any 80s family sitcom to be his ideal living situation. Like, if it had been Cosby, I think it would have rung truer.
I can see your point there. That one just seemed so left field to me, and some of them did.
I'm not going to lie, several of the 80s references I just glossed over because it did just feel... Like name dropping. You know,
Too many.
It's just there was a certain point when I just thought, yeah. Who cares?
By the time you reach the end of it, where it's like this huge culmination of where, you know, Mecha Godzilla versus Ultraman, I did not care one bit about that kind of stuff. It was like I'm done with the references, I'm done with this porn, basically. I want story.
Yeah. I did not like the very end when he, after the whole thing was over, and then he went out to see Artemis / Samantha in that kind of little bit of lovey-dovey moment at the end. Kind of annoyed me.
It wouldn't be an 80s flick without it.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Like, I can almost hear the Breakfast Club soundtrack as he's walking towards
her. No,
her.
Scott, it's all about Say Anything, because that is totally the reference being made at the end of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not defending that, but I think it's, by that time, I think you're already kind of expecting it.
You're already expecting it, you've already tuned out as well.
It's like, okay, just give me the John Hughes ending and let it, and we'll go.
Yeah, that was... I thought I would enjoy the 80s references more, since they are my references. It was definite overkill.
Well, it was excessive to the point where, like I said, most of it just felt tacked on.
Yeah.
And it felt meaningless for the most part.
Every single solitary 80s references possible was in there.
Although I have to admit, I did listen to Rush for like 2 weeks straight after finishing the book.
Well, that's because Rush is freaking awesome.
All right, but I mean, I listen to tons of music, but that book made me have to listen to Rush.
Weirdly, I listened to Rush right after, but it was their new one, just because they had a new one out.
Yeah.
No, Rush, please.
I will fight you. I will fight you about Rush. My national honor is at stake here.
I understand, Sweet Cheeks, I understand.
Although I have to say the one truly good music reference in there that I really liked was that They Might Be Giants one. No one in the world ever gets what they want, and that is beautiful. And he delivers line exactly where it needs to be said, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is one that's clever and appropriate instead of just, hey, 80s.
Devo! Did anyone else think all the references to anime that from like, were out of place with the rest of the 80s stuff?
Some of them were, because, well, some of them were from them. Like, I was waiting to hear more 80s anime, but instead it was mostly 90s.
Yeah, like, if it had been, like, Voltron and Macross, it would have made more sense, but there were, like, Evas. Right.
Yep. And Bebop is referenced in there as well.
Yeah.
Like, well, unfortunately, almost every anime reference I see makes me think of Scott.
So you just saw Scott face just hovering in front of the book.
It's probably why I cried so much while reading.
Oh.
Oh.
That's a reason worth crying over.
Actually, I want to talk about Daito and Shoto for a second, because you brought up that.
Yeah, I have a big problem with their depiction, personally.
Like, their depiction is problematic.
Well, I can't decide if it's a throwback to, like, the way they present, like, the Japanese guy, like, the Yakuza heavies in, like, early cyberpunk, or if it's just bad. Like, is it bad on purpose or just bad?
Explain why, because I'm not following. Like, explain what your point is, because I don't...
It's racist.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's not even like they're like... And it's not like he's exploiting, like, Japanese nerd stereotypes and being racist. He's just being, oh, look, they're Japanese, and they do...
This whole, like, sense of honor kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that got to me.
The one thing that really bothered me was the whole hikikomori thing that he was... Like, I think he didn't quite entirely get that whole issue.
Well, he didn't explore it.
He didn't explore it. But then he's, like, saying, like, almost all Japanese kids who play video games are totally this. And that came up a lot every time those two came up. You know, it's like,
yeah,
no, that's not right.
I would have liked that to be presented in a deep enough way so that we can conclude that this is how they have become. This is their world. Because, I mean, you have Wade and H and Artemis. They're kind of stereotypical geek subculture. From,
yeah, like,
you know,
Artemis is the perky goth chick. Like, she's Garcia from Criminal Minds.
Yeah, it's really... most of the characters are stereotypes. I mean, Sorrento is... And Og is, like, the total shaman, like, Obi-Wan character. You really... I mean, the characters are cut out of other media. But he had a chance to show us that Japan is kind of reverting to a stereotype of themselves as well, rather than making us think, hey, this is just very insensitive and awkward. But because all the characters are so autistic, and the feeling I get from the book is not the right, I think it's not the right emotional pace, I get the feeling that the author doesn't recognize that at all.
It's totally possible. I mean, I think part of with those two characters is he's trying to play on a stereotype that doesn't entirely exist anymore.
Yeah, and that's where my comment about it being a throwback to, like, Yakuza heavies from, like...
Well, and that's why...
Not Snow Crash, but Neuromancer.
But, you know, and that's maybe where I kind of see where you're coming from, Scott, where you're saying maybe it's done on purpose. Like, that maybe it's purposely done as being awkward because he's trying to play with a dead stereotype. That doesn't make it any less wrong, obviously, in terms of how it's racist, but...
Right, I need to feel it. I need to feel this is that it's a reference for sure, instead of going,
Well,
like,
that's just it.
Like, if
I
there had been some mirror
either.
Shades going, I would have been like, okay, these are just, you know, Zaibatsu men, and that's neat.
It makes me wonder, though, if he just wasn't sure how to present them without... Like... Regardless of how you look, the two of them were just awkward. They were awkward, like, most kids are not as overly formal or soft-spoken the way that they are. Some of the Japanese references and the way in which they're portrayed as being overly formal, yet that's something you see in Shogun times, kids, not the 80s. Like, it's almost like he was saying, these kids are from the Tokugawa period, not from modern times. Just in how they present their formality, which was really awkward to me. You know, somebody who's studied those periods for so long, I was kind of sitting there and going, you know, I don't think this is how most kids act. But okay, I'll roll with it. And it never got better for me in that regard.
Okay. I get it.
Becca, your thoughts?
I was going to say, do you think with the Japanese kids that it was their character that they were portraying in the game because they wanted to keep their real life and online life separate?
No, because, well, when Shoto comes up after Daito dies,
he's
still putting that out there, and if he were going to break down and be real,
that
would be the time to do it.
Yeah, and even if that's a possibility or could be a cool thing to explore, it's not explored and it's not indicated.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're at it, I think H's side of thing might have been more interesting to explore than Wade's. Maybe.
I can dig that.
Yeah.
While we're on plot, I think the most... it's not necessarily my biggest problem, but it's the most interesting section of the book, but has a big flaw in it. And that's the infiltration of the IOI building. Wade gets himself arrested, basically, by... he goes to debtor's prison. And while he's there, he hacks their... hacks the IOI, who's the big bad, who is completely one-dimensional, ridiculous big bad, for the record.
In the movie of this, Paul Reiser better be playing What's-His-Face.
And the problem, it's written with like concealed or delayed exposition so that you know Wade has a plan, but events that have already happened and are crucial are deliberately hidden. And to me, sometimes this works...
well, it's
in
like
a book.
This guy's a screenwriter, and he's sort of invoking the unspoken plan guarantee from like heist movies.
Yes, it works in film because it's not first person perspective.
But like, if we had another perspective to cut to, or it shifted perspective there and told, you know,
yes,
Wade, like what Wade's up, you found out what Wade's up to from H's side of things,
or you saw Sorrento looking at the footage and putting pieces together later.
Yeah,
but then I'm
it's
fine
first
with this.
Person, so mm-hmm. he's just like, I'm gonna dick with you, cause yeah,
right, I'm going to conceal all these things in order to make this scene have some tension in it. Where the tension is not, oh no, is he gonna get caught? The tension is,
what the hell's he doing?
What's he doing? Please tell me what I'm reading.
I didn't get any tension from that scene. I was just, when I read it, it was more of a, okay, what's going to do next? Yeah, okay, he did that. Yeah, he did that. Yeah, he did that. Okay. All right, so is he there yet? I didn't feel any tension of worrying of how it was going to work. It was more of, when is it going to be done?
Yeah. Well, I think that's wise, that you know that it's completely contingent on when you're going to receive the information of, oh, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm.
Not contingent on, ooh, this character has an interesting motive and an interesting obstacle, and let's see what happens when they meet. So I did really like that. That section was cool because it felt different from the rest of the book. It felt like the book was ramping up to have a serious consequences kind of confrontation, but then it's deflated with that weird method of exposition. Anybody else have cool, like, favorite parts? not really.
Like, that's the thing is, like, you don't quite get a good moment. Although I will say, I did laugh out loud when Aserek the Demi-Lich challenged you to 80s arcade games.
Yeah, good luck making that into a movie.
Oh, God. Like, that's a whole other thing is, like, okay, some of this is fair use for parody, and then I'm like, Harmony Gold's gonna sue you anyhow.
Even if they could get fair use for absolutely everything in here and get by okay, still that scene on a big screen, 90% of your audience is out.
Yeah,
that's actually probably the most interesting point of discussion for me is what does this? How does this get turned into a film? I mean, how do you have him playing a Rush song in a cave by himself to get an inscription that glows that he doesn't even know what it means? Until, like, you don't even find out what it means until later.
Yeah.
That's, you'd have to cut out so much of it.
Yeah.
There is so much of this movie that would just be montage, which would be appropriately 80s.
And I could see it being done like Scott Pilgrim style with kind of like the 8-bit and 16-bit effects, like people in the MMO world with, like, you know, 16-bit capes and weapons and things like that. That would be cool. But I have a feeling they're going to try to CG it through the roof.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, this is in, like, Ernest's screenplay-ified this and is shopping it around, and I'm like, no one's going to bite on this. There's just too much in the way of getting this done.
Isn't Warner Brothers that bought it?
I think so, but that doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's actually gonna.
Like, as like this is gonna be like this would be a great $50 million, $75 million movie. Warner Brothers gonna give him 20.
Well, I mean, maybe that'll actually force them to do things like, you know, makeup and puppetry and animatronics to make it look like an actual 80s movie. You know, models with explosions instead of, oh, we churn this out on the computer. I mean, that would actually make a movie I want to see. Make it look exactly like The Last Starfighter. Even with you know, one-dimensional characters and kind of a flimsy plot, I'm down. I to me, a movie is about the spectacle. I think that's ultimately how the book fails for me, is that a novel is not about the spectacle. It's not a visceral medium.
I get you there. Like, I understand that, you know, he's surfing on top of a DeLorean with the stupid sensor bar from Knight Rider on the front of it. But it's another thing if they recreate the shot from Back to the Future 2 where he does that.
Oh, man. Maybe I was wrong.
What?
Okay, you just put it in way too vivid depiction for me. Maybe that is a bad idea.
Well, there's some things that would just be bad, like a DeLorean with the stupid sensor bar from Knight Rider on it. But then again, like having, you know, a crazy puppet lich guy show up and then kind of morph semi 8-bit and then have the two of them do the ostrich fight thing.
Yeah,
playing Joust.
Right, and then also, like, that Joust scene is going to have no tension at all because you're not going to be able to show Joust and you're like, yeah, like rooting for the guy to win. You just wait for him to win or lose. You pick.
Okay, now here's the other question. Would this book work as a video game?
Like a really tongue-in-cheek old-school RPG?
Like, yeah, super tongue-in-cheek old-school RPG where it suddenly breaks and you have to actually play Joust or...
That's fun. That's cool. I dig the mini games. But, I mean, really, it's going to depend because some people love all of the game, a lot of the games are referenced in it, but then won't necessarily care about an RPG. So, I think you run into the same problem that we have where some of us are cool with some references and not cool with others. And some things seem racist, but other things, it's not obvious necessarily that it's racist. So, I think part of it is that it tries to balance novel and video game references and all that, and movies. And if you'd made it into a video game, maybe it'd be best done as like a suite where you could do like a main adventure and that would unlock mini games you could just play on your own.
Of course, the text adventure version of the movie War Games would be awful.
Oh my god. The reenacting of those.
Like,
there's
that chunk
so
of it where
weird.
It's like, why did I pay for a novelization of War Games?
Yeah, that's really odd. And not bad odd, but just, what is happening?
Becca, you've been quiet. Talking point, us.
Oh, I don't know. The first time I read the book, I thought I enjoyed it. And then I read it again, and then I realized I didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought, so... Honestly, I kind of forgot a lot of the book.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah, I mean...
The second time I read it, I didn't like it that much, and then I forgot a lot.
You know, it's like when you watch, what was that movie? Sucker Punch. First time, ooh, it's pretty! And the second time, you're like, wow, this kind of sucks.
I will not watch that a second time.
I don't think anyone should watch a Zack Snyder movie twice.
Didn't see it. I did read something somewhere saying that Klein put, there's an Easter egg in the book, in
oh,
the
yeah,
store.
No. There's like a real life egg hunt in it where if you bought the paperback and the hardcover, you could win a DeLorean somehow.
Didn't that already go down?
Yeah, that went down.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Fine, never mind.
You've missed your chance to win a DeLorean.
That's actually neat.
Well, I also
I like the interactivity.
Like, that's actually a cool idea.
Yeah, transmedia is cool.
Sam, you got anything?
I guess I feel like I'm the odd one out because I actually really enjoyed it.
Well, throw some criticism our way.
Well, It's not so much that I disagree with you guys, because I don't. I actually agree with a lot of the points. I'm just, you know, when I was reading it, I guess I was just so engrossed by the adventure that, yeah, things bothered me after I finished reading it, but at the same time, I don't think it bothered enough to hinder my enjoyment of the fact that it was a fun, quick read. And sometimes you just need a read that doesn't have, you know, literary substance. Because I don't think this was trying to be any form of great literature. I mean, I like the fact that it was a coming-of-age story. I like the fact that, yeah, the characters are one-dimensional. I wouldn't outright call them autistic, as I'm not really a fan of that word.
I mean literally.
I understand, but not a fan. I just think personally, you know, for me, I just had a lot of fun just going through the world and being a part of the world building experience. But, you know, I obviously took the novel a little bit more personally, I guess, than most.
I don't know if I'd use autistic, but maybe socially awkward. But I think they were all, you know, products of their environment. They, you know, pretty much grew up online where nobody goes out and interacts anymore. I think we can kind of see a lot of that happening in the world now as it is.
Yep.
As I think someone I would agree. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
As someone who didn't get a lot of the references, the game references, heard of the games, seriously, the only thing I've ever played out of everything that was mentioned was Pac-Man. That was it. So, you know, knew of a lot of the games, never played them, so a lot of the stuff was new to me. A lot of the references I didn't get. I liked the story. I thought it was a fun story. And it was a fast read, which, you know, like Sam said, sometimes that's a good thing. It's just nice to have, you know, to just kind of sit back and enjoy the story. It wasn't deep. Like when they, you know, got into the part where you find out more about H and you find out about Artemis. It's just everything is glossed over so fast. You know, so quickly. Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more on that, but you know, for the most part, I enjoyed it. I thought it was I liked the story.
All right, now here's the question Tony always asks at the end of movies, and I always think it's kind of pointless. But here, I think it's an interesting thing to explore: is who is this book for? Because I mean, it's YA, but it's also got a butt ton of pop culture references. No one under 30's gonna get.
It's for Ernest Cline and Ernest Cline alone.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. It is all the things he likes in one book.
Certainly not for someone who's looking for something meaty. Because not so much.
I don't know. I would say that it's for people who... It's for young kids now. I mean, it is young adult. And similar to Halliday, who is trying to walk people through this path to loving the things he loved, and so it's basically sharing himself with other people. I think Ernest Cline is doing that for his readers, hoping that he turns some of his young readers on to the stuff that he loves and that defined his love of all these things. So I think that his intention, anyway, at least that I can pick up, is that it's for people who have not necessarily gotten into those things. But it's kind of like the Disney movie that actually has a decent plot, you know, where it's like, hey, the kids can watch this, and but then there's kind of some jokes that maybe they don't get, and the parents get it too. It's you know, people who get the references can enjoy it, but ultimately it's for people who might have their horizons broadened by being exposed to it.
See, okay, now here. I appreciate that idea, but Lena, you gonna play Joust?
Well, there's so many. He plays shotgun with it so hard. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. That's another question. After we do this, is what 80s things did you pick up afterwards? But Becca, who do you think this is for?
You know, and I'm trying to think who this is for, and I don't know. Because, I mean, I think it's for anybody who just looks for something fun to read. Because it was good the first time, but the second time I just I didn't enjoy it as much. Anyone who likes video games?
Well, would gamers enjoy all of those old references? I can't answer that. But I thought, you know, it's full of 80s references. That's my stuff. It was a little overkill. I thought I would, and a lot of it I did like. A lot of it was fun. But it was overkill. All
right. Sam, who's this for?
I know, I kind of like that answer about it being for Ernest Cline.
Okay.
Because you know what? I think that's actually incredibly true. I mean, I know I've tried to use this book in my job every so often just because it's such a fun read and it is engaging. And I've met some students who've been really happy reading it just because, you know, there are things about it that speak to them. And, you know, a lot of them relate to the characters in this story. And it's nice just to see them kind of, you know, chat with me about how they think and feel about this world. So I definitely think, you know, that the high school audience is kind of perfect for it. This is obviously something I don't think I'd get my mother to read. and my mother's pretty badass with her 80s references. But I just can't see her being all like, yeah, I'd want to read this. It's just like, I don't think my 10-year-old nephew would understand it, right? So there's got to be kind of a happy medium. I don't really know who would enjoy this book. You know, a lot of my gaming girlfriends, they loved it. But they loved it because it was stuff they knew. I mean, and I felt the same way. I mean, it was such a popcorn read that I think that's ultimately why I enjoyed it so much.
Oh, I like that phrase, popcorn read.
Well, it's much nicer than airport novel. But I guess now that other thing I brought up, did you pick up any 80s stuff because of the book specifically? Like, I know Paul hit some Rush.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. No, I cringed a little when I saw Rush. I'm not afraid to admit that.
Never. I'll find you.
Just be thankful you're not going to our con. I'll take you down. Don't think I won't. I'm not scared of you.
No one should be afraid of Scott. He's kind of a kitten.
Aww.
Oh, I also watched The Last Starfighter right after.
What's funny is about a week before I read this book, I finally saw Tron, the original. So I was kind of already in that 80s mode of stuff. It didn't make me want to go listen to anything or watch anything or play anything.
It didn't make me want to go back and listen to Duran Duran and Oingo Boingo, which I kind of do anyway, so... because that's my stuff. So yeah, if anything...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so if it didn't turn me on to anything new, but it made me say, yeah, I need to go listen to Oingo Boingo now. Because then it's in my head and I'm happy.
As soon as I saw the Oingo Boingo part, I was like, man, now I just want to watch the Forbidden Zone. Like that. There we go. There's a reference for you. You guys haven't seen the Forbidden Zone?
I'm trying to remember if I have.
Oh, I have not. Man, no. Danny Elfman is in it. It's Oingo Boingo, like the freaky black and white musical, basically.
No, I haven't seen
it's
that one.
It's incredibly strange.
I gotta look for this now.
Yes, I recommend it.
Okay, Sam, did you pick up anything 80s after this?
No, because most of the references I got, and those are things I already do anyways. I mean, except for the part where I was humming the Back to the Future theme a couple times, but otherwise, I mean, he didn't make me go seek out things I didn't already know, and or have watched a million freaking times. Oh, Back to the Future.
Yeah, no, I don't think I went, I cringed a lot at the music references and avoided 80s music entirely.
You just hate the 80s. That doesn't
help. I will fight you for that.
And I give you permission to beat on him.
Thank you.
Fine. We will have a knockdown drag out fist fight about Rush and Oingo Boingo.
Oh, and I will win.
Rush wins.
I like them both.
Oingo Boingo wins. Always.
I'm staying out of this fight.
But I did not really seek out anything 80s-ish, but it kept reminding, it does, it did keep reminding me of better, other better things, I think, so I'm like,
oh, honey,
maybe
it
I
kept
should,
reminding you how much you hate the 80s.
Yes, it, I do hate a lot of things about the 80s.
Why do you hate the 80s?
Because there's a lot of things that are creatively bankrupt about the 80s. Family Ties especially.
Loved Family Ties.
Scott hates all the things you love. This is
what
the
would
problem.
We do, maybe, without us? Because I can sing I can sing that friggin' song right now! Don't think I can't!
Let's not get the first episode DMCA'd for you violating copyrights by singing the Family Ties song.
Where do you all fall on the Lady Hawk argument between Wade and H?
Okay.
I've never seen Lady Hawk, so that one there kind of...
Oh, no, that's not okay.
Becca's concerned.
Wait, what did, I missed the whole beginning of what Paul said.
Oh, where do you fall on the Lady Hawk argument? That's like the one key piece of nerd argument they have, which is basically, is Lady Hawk good, or did somebody fish it out of the sewer?
Lady Hawk is awesome. Even when you look back at it and you realize it's cheesy 80s and it's still awesome.
Yes, for some reason I appreciate the kitsch even though I recognize that it's bad. So I'm somewhere in the middle.
Cheesy 80s is good.
I understand it's cheese. And I think a lot of people involved did and just went with it. But so there's that. And then I think I give it a few more points for the soundtrack.
So the takeaway is listen to the Lady Hawk soundtrack.
Yes. Also, how did they get through an 80s nerd debate without doing, like, Empire versus Jedi?
Don't know. But the answer is Empire.
Empire. Okay, final thoughts and an 80s reference. Someone go.
I don't have an 80s reference.
You didn't tell us to prepare 80s references.
I thought of it, like, 3 seconds ago.
You know, pop quizzes are not my forte, mister.
Dude, you don't have to be you can put even less effort than Ernest Cline did into some of these 80s references. you could just say Frankie Says Relax and move on.
I had that shirt. I slept in that shirt.
Okay, I'll start. Final thought is it's not bad. I didn't hate it. It's just deeply flawed in most of the ways that bother me specifically. So I do agree it's kind of a fun read, and I stuck with it. I mean, most books I don't like, I just stop like halfway through. So if this stuff sounds interesting to you, then don't skip it, because it's definitely on people's minds and in discussion. And my 80s reference is Silver Hawks.
I wish I got that.
I'll give you a hint. It's from Silverhawk.
Which is probably why I didn't get that.
I'm not going to lie, I just found some really awful 80s jokes.
Okay, well, then you can go with your final thought.
Hit us up, man.
Okay, so I had a lot of fun with the book. I mean, if you can get over the insane amount of 80s references that serve no purpose for the most part, then there's a fun popcorn book to be had. Right? Make sure you have your popcorn beside you as you read. You know, you'll have a couple giggles. And it's fun. As for my 80s reference, my question to you guys is, what do you call Dolly Parton doing the backstroke?
I don't know.
I don't know if I want to
know. What?
Islands in the Stream.
I like that.
I'm muting your mic.
I hope that was funny in the 80s.
Of course I had to pick the joke about Dolly Parton. Come on, Scott.
Oh, God.
You leave Dolly alone. She has her own theme park. Which I've heard is the second happiest place on Earth.
Okay. Anyone else ready to go, or should I?
You.
Okay, so again, like, okay, the Ernest Cline is, unless his any other books he does sort of radically shift. I'm going to cast him in as sort of the lesser Cory Doctorow. It's still enjoyable. I wouldn't say don't read it, but there are issues with it that you can have fun picking at for an hour with your friends. And, but otherwise, all this is lost, like tears in the rain.
That was lame.
You will not impugn Rutger Hauer.
Lame reference is lame. Beatings so later.
Didn't you just prove your point with the 80s there?
Yes. I did.
Becca?
Okay. I would say it was an alright book. It's fun read. I don't know if it needs to be read a second time. I don't have an 80s reference. I wore leg warmers in the 80s. There, that was my 80s reference.
What particular neon shade were they?
I had blue ones with hearts on them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they were little white hearts. I was 7. So, yeah.
That is so Kimmy Gibbler.
Yeah, she was I went 90s. There.
Isn't that 90s?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, you have to understand that the TGIF lineup was the 80s well into the 90s.
Yeah.
Man.
I don't know. I have to say, even though I don't care about Family Ties, the acting, like the performances and the writing and stuff like that in it is far more nuanced than almost every sitcom that's out there.
The setup for it was pretty genius, and then Michael J. Fox just made it better.
They were and I'm trying to remember going further back, but I kind of remember them being the front runners of a very special episode, because you had Tom Hanks as the alcoholic uncle who...
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
I'm saying, who slapped the daughter, Mallory. You had the dad's coworker who... Again, is Mallory again. The dad's coworker who tried to cop a feel off of Mallory.
Oh, so and there was the one where the black people moved into the neighborhood their house got wrecked by racists.
That's right.
There was one on the other night on like some like Nickelodeon channel or something, and it was one where Alex's girlfriend was like 45 or something.
Oh yeah.
And his parents were like the whole time through the whole episode, they just showed his parents being creeped out.
But it's okay, because Michael J. Fox was like 27 when they filmed that.
Yeah.
Although convincingly 17.
Well, he's still convincingly 17.
He is. So this was, you know, before a very special, on tonight's very special episode of Blossom. I think Family Ties got that all started. Hey, can that be my 80s reference?
Yeah, that can be your 80s reference.
Yay!
Okay, I blame Ernest Klein for indirectly reminding me of Blossom.
Now her hat. It's like haunting me. Oh, just the hat.
Wait, what's the other one I can bring up which is even worse than Blossom? Oh, good damn. That kid with the socks.
Pinky Brewster.
Thank you. The kid with thank you.
Pinky Brewster.
I'd rather watch Blossom than Punky Brewster.
Small wonder.
No. Punky Brewster. Small Wonder was awesome when I was 8.
Oh my lord. Yeah, I watched that too, except I was much too old to watch it, but I did. I'm ashamed.
All right, that's a good ending right there. I'm
ashamed. So you're ashamed, and what did you think of the book?
I lean more towards Sam. I'll use her phrase, it's a popcorn book. It was a fun read. It was a quick read. I liked the 80s references. Even all the game references, even though I didn't play them, but I remembered a lot of them. The references I didn't get, that was okay. I was still cool with that. Character development was shallow, but for what the book was, it didn't need to be anything more than that. That's about it. As a fun read, I'd recommend it, absolutely.
Okay, so hit us up on the comments or the Goodreads group to let us know what you think of all this. Feel free to yell at us.
We deserve it.
We enjoy it. We're sick that way.
Yes. So next time,
Fight Club. Fight Club by... What's his name?
Kalaniuk.
Dang, I can't pronounce it.
Just call him Charlie.
Fight Club by Mr. Charlie. And I think that is all we have, people.
All right.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit BackseatProducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on Goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.